Hello, Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network listeners. I am Jeff Hawkins, co-host of Shake Them Ropes, with a very special announcement. If it's been a while or you've never listened to us before, the original gang is back, myself and Rob McCarron, back talking wrestling. We have no idea where this show's going to go, where we're going to keep any of the old bits or any of the old things in there. It's going to be a process. It's going to be a journey, and we'd like for you to come along with us. Only on Shake Them Ropes on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Jesse Collings. And joining me once again, he is our Western Canada correspondent. He is the host of the Through the Years, an ROH retrospective podcast. Returning guest, fellow self-deprecation aficionado. It's Trevor Dame. Trevor, welcome to the show.
Jesse, how could I refuse the show when I just want to note you were talking about some behind the scenes talk you had about me before the show started. I took a quick gander at your Discord thread on the Voices of Wrestling thing, and you did a great job introducing hyping my appearance up. Because let me just, for the listener, I'll just read this. You wrote on your Discord, recording a new pod tonight on the decline/downfall of F4W/Wrestling Observer Newsletter. If it's anyone I trust to handle that topic, it's Collings. Someone wrote, hell yeah. Someone wrote, guest or solo. You wrote, guest. Someone wrote, it's Eric Bischoff. Someone, Joe Gagne, my old friend, he wrote, Big Dave himself. And you wrote, and I quote, LOL, those are good guys. It's just Trevor Dame. So I hope everyone enjoys the sixth and final appearance I make on this podcast.
Yeah, so I posted that just to, whet the appetites of some people, to get some people excited about the topic. Oh, yeah. So they'll be looking for this in their feed tomorrow. I didn't really think that there would actually be like anticipation about who the guest would be, which is like, and that's not a slight on you. And then, we've got some witty people in the Voice of Wrestling Discord, in my room. So they said, oh, is it going to be Eric Bischoff? It's going to be Dave Meltzer. I'm like, oh, I should probably, I don't want to hype up this guest too much. It's just Trevor. He's been on the show.
Yeah. I mean, I know how much you would love to have Eric on. Controversy creates cash.
I don't even know what I would say. I don't even know what I would say to Bischoff if I had him on the show. Like, what would I do? Yell at him about being a liar? Like,
yeah, it's just.
Like,
and he doesn't have a lot of substance, like if you want to talk about the old stuff, even there, he doesn't come off as great.
Yeah, like he's just like doesn't remember like a lot of like stuff, and
he has selective memory, when things favor him, then his memory really comes into focus. So
yeah, I don't find him, and obviously like it's fun to dunk on him as like a hack, like, person with Dave Meltzer envy or whatever, and frustrated that he can't get a job in a business that he's allegedly an expert in. But like, I don't really find him that interesting to talk about. Like, I feel like I got all of my like death of WCW like in interest like out of my system like 15 years ago.
Well, yeah, like, that's the thing. He's like the most examined, most participated in like the conversation since then. Like, there, every stone has been looked under when it comes to Eric Bischoff.
Yeah, it'd be like having Bret Hart on and like talking about like the Montreal screw job. I'd like to talk about Bret Hart about a bunch of other stuff in his career, like working in Japan and working against like the original Tiger Mask and like getting started in Puerto Rico and like all this like more niche Bret Hart news. But like, yeah. Eric Bischoff, like, what am I going to say to Eric Bischoff? Like, Eric, what was it like, running Nitro in 1998? Like, did you think it was a bad idea when you did this? Like, I don't know. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
But I feel like we're going to be hearing about that until at least all those people are dead, which is going to take a long time.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like a lot of wrestling fans, that is the limit of how far their interest goes. Because, it's always a sliding scale as history moves on. And I do think eventually we will start to age out of it, where I know I already feel old, but eventually we will reach a time, probably quicker than we want, where like current fans like biggest passing interest will be like, oh, the initial John Cena era, and that's like as far back as I really have interest in. Everything else seems like a subtitled foreign black and white film to me.
Look, I don't. I'm too young to remember Nitro in the Attitude
Yeah.
Era. I was 6 when it closed,
Yeah. So,
and I have,
wait.
and I have gray hair. Like we're not to make everyone feel old, but like we're a distance away from that whole era. And I do wonder. That'd be actually an interesting question. Like is the Attitude Era, like the discussion around the Monday Night War era and stuff like that, is that as big and as ubiquitous among wrestling conversation as it was like 10 years ago? I think it's kind of, is it?
Yeah, and I think it gets fuzzier as time goes on. Like it gets reduced as more and more people, a lot of people, they do have some passing interest in history, but when they revisit, they just, they might watch a couple documentaries, read one book about it, maybe they watch some of the key shows. And so I feel like as time goes on, history gets the general knowledge of a period. There will always be some people that know a lot about something. It gets less granular, less specific. It becomes people just know, oh yeah, I know the crib notes that would help me pass a test about the Attitude Era. Where as opposed to, when we first lived through it, everyone had kind of knew all the minutia, and in some ways that, you get way more knowledge, but in some ways you're almost kind of scarred by that. You have kind of a different take on it because you don't have that emotional distance.
Yeah, to me that's really, it's a really interesting aspect of like as history goes on, and like there's a limit of stuff we can discover about, like we talked about like the death of WCW and just how that's been covered to such an extreme degree, with just so much different content, whether it's these retrospective video series or podcast series, or Brian Alvarez has the fantastic book and Guy Evans has his like alternative book to Brian's book, and like there's a million different, wrestler, autobiographies where they talk about, whatever they were doing during that era. And it's just like, there's not like, are we ever going to learn anything really new about the Attitude Era or the Monday Night Wars? Like, is like some new big revelation going to come out in like the next 5 or 6 years? Like, probably not. Like, I think we're
Yeah.
at a limit of what we can say. So it's all of it is just rehashing, how WCW got an advantage, how WWF came back, how WCW fell apart. Like, there's nothing new to really discover there. It's no, there's no hidden secrets. There's, we can speculate about things like Montreal and like what was going on backstage in WCW, and wrestlers that were around that tell conflicting stories about what was going on. But there's like nothing of real substance that's ever going to come out that we don't already know, I feel like.
Yeah. And especially as stories go on, not to be too morbid, but the longer you're removed from a story, the more people involved with that era or that story start to pass away or their memories get worse, where that alone is going to decrease the chances of any new revelation. So I think, yeah, I think the last re really notable thing might have been there was some stuff in the Guy Evans Nitro book you just referenced that shined a little more light on the idea of maybe WCW's, I mean, Turner's creative accounting with WCW, and maybe WCW not always getting the complete financial credit. And you get little bits of trivia things, but there's no like earth-shattering, completely changes the way you look at things. Yeah, those revelations are probably long gone.
Yeah, and we also live, and it's also wrestling, so it's also like an unbelievable like lack of trust you should have in like people
Yeah,
telling
yeah.
stories and stuff like that. Just from a both a carny perspective, and like these guys have got to remember like nuances from 25, 30 years ago. Like that's gonna be hard for anyone. I couldn't like I can't tell you what I did 2 years ago, let alone 25, and I don't land on my head for a living. So think about
Yeah.
how hard it would be if I did.
Yeah, for I've only landed on my head a couple times, and it probably didn't help, so I can understand that.
What were the instances that led to you landing on your head? Because I don't think I've ever landed on my head before. Not that I can remember.
The big one would be a I was this is a great way to start a show, by the way, but I was walking in a grocery store as a little kid, and they had just mopped the floor and it was wet, and I slipped and went, took a full back bump where my head hit the metal ridge of like a freezer case really hard. And people that worked there saw it, and they followed me and my mother around the store the rest of the time we were shopping, keeping reminding us, you know, you can't sue us, right? Like there was a wet floor sign there. Like you don't have any right. Like a lot of concern was shown. And then I remember playing WWF Royal Rumble on the Super Nintendo as my mom watched to make sure I wasn't going to have a
That was like
seizure
your
or something.
cognitive test. Like, let's see if he can play WWF on the
It was
Super
more just like
Nintendo.
you stay busy, and I'm just going to watch you for a designated amount of time until I'm confident that we don't need to go to an ER.
Your
But I
cognitive
was fine.
function. If you could perform the Ultimate Warrior's finishing move in the Super Nintendo game, that will prove that your cognitive function is good enough that we don't need to go to the
If
ER.
you can button mash to win the Royal Rumble, because man, you had to press those buttons pretty damn hard to win all those grapples. But yeah, you've got the dexterity, kid. Your brain's fine.
Yeah, I can't recall a time where I definitely can recall times I've fallen, and I can tell times I've gotten hit in the head, but I can't recall a time I actually landed on my head. I probably have fallen and hit my head before. I'm picturing like a some sort of like accident where like I land like literally on the crown of my head. That's never happened. Anyway,
And anyway.
talking about head injuries. I want to talk about a topic that has come up a few times, like kind of in passing, but this is we're gonna take it like actually dedicate a whole episode to it, and that is looking at, F4W Online, the combined Figure Four Wrestling and Wrestling Observer Newsletter website. I'm sure that almost everyone listening to this podcast is familiar with this website. I'm sure people have a lot of my listeners are either current or former subscribers to this website. Are familiar with the personalities involved. But I guess I'll start with my opening take, which is like Dave Meltzer is like the institute of like hardcore fan smarkdom in the Western wrestling world. If you are a big fan of pro wrestling, you are somebody who is at least familiar with Dave Meltzer's work, if not actively consuming it frequently. And Dave is a great beacon to kind of bring these different hardcore wrestling fans, these fans that really care and love pro wrestling and not just, WWE, but just pro wrestling in general, and bring them together. And whether that's a subscriber of Dave, whether you're a participant on the board, which is the message board that they have on the website, and a lot of people have been subscribers for decades, and so that really should bring wrestling fans together. And my frustration with the website in general, and this is less of a critique of like the actual Observer newsletter and just the overall website, is that it doesn't offer a whole lot besides the newsletter at this point. And it should be a place that it should be like the one-stop shop for hardcore pro wrestling fandom. And instead, it feels way, way too similar to every other wrestling news website out there, every single wrestling aggregation site, every single, wrestling podcast network out there. There is very little like niche coverage of things. It's all focused around WWE and AEW for the most part. And it's, I think, been kind of a waste of Dave's reputation and Dave's ability to attract all these fans. And instead of being this like incredible institute of diverse pro wrestling knowledge with all these really interesting different voices working for a site led by editor Dave Meltzer, it's just kind of like a trash site in a lot of ways, and a waste of what should be the central place for hardcore pro wrestling fandom. And the wrestling industry in general is worse off by not having that.
Well, like I think that's fair. There's a bunch of things I could say that I would, first off, I would say the way I would put it, I would, and to kind of just more like kind of to agree with you, but to put it in another way, I kind of see it as the core selling points of the wrestling that you would subscribe to the Wrestling Observer or visit the website for remain the same today. It is Dave Meltzer and the Observer, and that is largely the same. I know in recent years, Dave has offloaded a bit of like the MMA recaps to Ryan Frederick, and even having Brian Alvarez write a little bit of the meat and potato TV recaps. But for the most part, the Observer is mostly still Dave, and it is as Dave as it ever was, you know, for good, a lot of good and some annoying occasionally. And you know, Dave still does the podcast and with Brian and Garrett, which he's been doing for years, and those have the same pluses and minuses those have had for years. And Brian Alvarez still does his core of podcasts with, you know, Vinny and Granny and all the gang and Lance Storm and everybody like that. And those remain, from what I've heard, largely the same. But the container that holds all of it, we've seen in the last couple of years especially, it has changed to what you've said, which is it is almost at this point indistinguishable from nine other SEO slop major wrestling websites. In fact, if you look, not to, I won't name anyone's names, I won't besmirch people because we've all done things to make a buck. But if you look at a lot of the recent hires that post a lot of the articles on the Observer site, like the news stories and things, they are people that have extensive experience doing that, the SEO stuff in wrestling websites and other websites. In fact, I think at least one or two of their profiles, like the first accolade is that they are like, I just will look at one and I'll just say blank, I won't say their name, is an SEO minded blank, blank football, combat sports, gaming, and pro wrestling writer. So there's a few of them where that's the first accolade. It's not that they're a great writer, they're an SEO minded one, and that's really what we all admire. Like when I go on a website and I want to read for, I want to see like the voices on that website, to no pun intended, I really want to know, like, are the SEO minded? And it is reassuring to hear that.
Yeah, to me, I don't really see, I don't really like fundamentally have that big of an issue with like the aggregated news and that being a facet of the website, because people want to go to the website and get their wrestling news from, and they're gonna get the aggregation that's pulled from other whether it's Sean Ross Sapp or Pro Wrestling Insider or other pieces of not or just taking stuff out of the Observer itself. I don't really have a problem with that. Like, I don't really like the SEO slop or anything like that, but that just is what it is. I can and I can see why they want to do that. I have a bigger issue with like the lack of analysis related contents and other things going on at the site than I do with like the news stories and stuff like that. I think like to compare Dave to somebody else in media. Are you familiar with Bill Simmons at all?
Yes.
Okay, so Bill Simmons is not totally unlike Dave. Was a pioneer in terms of like online blog writing, writing about sports mostly, but also like pop culture, in a kind of a unique way, especially at the time in the late 90s when he was doing this. And Bill Simmons today is largely the same kind as Bill Simmons. He doesn't really write anymore, but he has, a very successful podcast. It's one of the most popular podcasts in the world. And he also, but he has, his website, which is The Ringer. He also had Grantland before that, but let's just use The Ringer as an example. And The Ringer has, it's Bill Simmons' website. I think most people that are, consuming Ringer content are Bill Simmons fans first and foremost, not unlike Dave Meltzer and the people who are consuming the Observer Figure Four website. But what Bill has done is Bill has been really good, I think, at identifying other people over the years, bringing them onto his site and creating new personalities and new content and different fun things for the site that fit kind of the theme of the Bill Simmons brand of kind of like mixing sports and pop culture, but also, having all sorts of other interesting people involved. And I think with Dave and Brian, there's a lot of discussion about like what would the Observer site be without Dave? Like, if Dave retired, what would happen to it? What would people be subscribing for? And I think about that compared to like The Ringer, which is like, yeah, Bill is the biggest driver, but there's a lot of other stuff on The Ringer that other people are going to be interested in. That's not just, Bill Simmons podcasts. And I think that there are plenty of people out there that if Dave really wanted to, and he clearly doesn't, but if Dave really wanted to, he could recruit a bunch of really smart, intelligent, wrestling analysis people, content creators, people who have fun podcasts, people that write funny articles, people that are, really astute observers of wrestling from across the wrestling world. He could have all that because his brand is big enough where people would be champing at the bit for to work on that. But for whatever reason, the site is just kind of like this wasteland of people that are either like Dave and Brian's friends or the people like you described that are just doing the SEO stories. And there's no like legacy building with that site where it feels like Dave is the only reason really to subscribe. And Brian does have his fans. We'll talk about Brian in a minute, but like it just to me it just seems like such a wasted opportunity where you could have this should be a site that is like the absolute pinnacle of like wrestling analysis, and instead it's like Dave and like a bunch of in some cases like just like clowns.
Well, like, I think if you're hoping that Dave would curate a website with a bunch of exciting voices, I think you have always been doomed to disappointment for a couple reasons. And I think the first is, I mean, I don't know the inner workings of Dave Meltzer's businesses, dealings, and his mind, but you see a little bit, and I followed him my whole life, basically most of it, his work. And Dave has always been a guy that has given me nothing but the impression of he wants to do the job. He wants to write the Observer. He'll go on some podcasts. Someone puts a mic in front of him. He's happy to do that. And everything else, I don't think he has any interest in. I don't think he has interest in a larger initiative. Like the early, I mean, you talk about how young you were when Nitro was around. The early Observer site in the late 90s, it was another site where it was like someone else is doing this and just throwing it up for Dave. It was different, but it was the same of, Dave is the draw, but everything around this, there's no touch of Dave here because I don't think that interests Dave. And I think the other th reason you'd be doomed for disappointment is I don't necessarily think Dave, like, I think Dave likes and knows and respects a bunch of good writers and online, but I think Dave also likes and respects a bunch of people that are maybe nice people that don't have a lot of interesting things to say. And I think you see some of them on the website. I mean, I could name names, but they'll probably make them angrier at me than they already are. But like, so I think this idea that Dave Meltzer would ever like what you're seeing now, the evolution of the site is not dictated by Dave, but I think the direction of the website has never been dictated by Dave since for 30 years. In fact, there's been a couple times. These were back when I used to, post on the message board on Figure Four and read it. There were a couple times. This is how powerless Dave is on a website that he's the main selling point, where he'll be like, someone will be getting him mad or saying something mean to him or something, and Dave would be like, why isn't this guy banned? And no one will ban him, and they don't get banned. And I, in a way, that's like that was part of the chaos that made the prime days of that message board fun, but it was also illustrative of just like how separate Dave was from everything, and how the people like running the site in a lot of ways is like, okay, Gramps, you're here to write the words, you're here to do the podcast and make us the money, but like any quibbles, we're just going to kind of ignore.
Yeah, I mean that's it, but I guess that's like part of the problem is like I wish Dave did take a more active role in like building the site as an extension of himself, the way like Bill Simmons did with The Ringer. as opposed to like Dave is kind of in his bubble where he's in like the Daveverse where, he records his podcasts, which he kind of doesn't like, he just kind of does at the behest of other people. Like he's not really producing his podcast. He's just, whether it's Brian or Garrett is just like running the podcast and Dave is there. And then Dave writes the newsletter and that's all he wants to do. And that's like, I'm not gonna fault him. That's what he wants to do. But I think the wrestling world is worse off by Dave not being concerned about anything else going on with his site or the Observer brand or anything like that, because I think it has so much potential to be a place, like I said, like a one-stop shop for covering the wider wrestling world. And you have places like Voice of Wrestling, like Post, like the Social Suplex Network, where they have all of these different people covering all these niche subjects, and everyone there, for the most part, does a really great job. So I'm not definitely like I don't want to say like we don't need those places because we do, but the Observer should be the place to go for all of that stuff. And the fact that it isn't is doing the wrestling world a disservice because the people are already there for Dave. And we should have, like, at this point, Dave is 66, 67 years old. Like, we should have an army of like Dave understudies and like people who were influenced by Dave working for that site, producing content, having their own podcast, covering different aspects of wrestling. And we just don't. And Dave has never really been interested in taking on that role. And not everyone is going to be suited for like that kind of level of like recruitmentship and mentorship. But it would be a lot better if Dave was more active in that on that behalf. Because there's the people are out there, the voices are out there. And it's not like you have to pay these people any like a ton of money. Like most of these people that are doing great work are doing it because, for the love of the game, they're doing it for free. And so there's the only thing that's really stopping that is just like an organizational effort to bring these people together. But that just has never happened. And the result is you have, a site that's useful for if you're a big fan of Dave and like really not that useful if you are want anything else, in my opinion.
But that's where I will say, like, I do think the SEO thing plays, and I'll explain, like, a bigger role of that because the Observer site's never been perfect, but there has been good non-Dave related things there. I think Brian got early into wrestling. He was a fairly early adopter of wrestling podcasting, and I think those early years of Brian and Vinny were, they weren't for everybody, but I think a lot of us thought they were fun and they were a unique, flavor of wrestling commentary and, his own cast of characters. And I think you've seen some good people. I mean, I'm sure I'm going to leave some out, but people that have done podcasts for the Observer in particular, like Alan Counihan, is probably one of the most varied, like, in terms of topics. You are going to, if you listen to a few episodes of Alan, you are going to get about as well-rounded a picture of the wrestling world in terms of the things that interest him is like is Meltzer level, if not in some ways, I would say exceeds it a little bit. But he moved to the Pro Wrestling Torch, or Dragon King Carl does some historical stuff, but he doesn't get much mention on the website. There's the Big Audio Nightmare, which is for years has been doing Japanese wrestling. I think they're down to an episode a month now. But there has been little stuff. But I think the thing I will say about the SEO is, the kind of site you want isn't possible under the SEO framework. Because I've written before for sites that are dictated by SEO, and I can tell you, like you, I think you touched on earlier, you said that things that aren't just you were talking about things that aren't just focused on like the biggest promotions, the biggest wrestlers. I can tell you when you write for a lot of these SEO, sites, they tell you what to write about. You don't submit as a writer things to them. And if they do allow submissions, the editors will look up what the topic of your proposed article, where they rank on Google Trends. And if they don't do good enough on Google Trends, it does not matter how good your pitch is or if the editor even likes the pitch, it will not be approved. And SEO is about chasing clicks by any means necessary. And chasing clicks means, instead of Okay, I'll say, this is going to be a little long-winded, but I'm just going to go into this. I'll say, I think one of the great things about Dave and the Observer has always been, he's always, the things that get the most coverage in the Observer always have been the largest U.S. promotions, which makes sense because he's an American covering professional wrestling, and so those things get the most. But Dave has always tried to cover the entire world, and if there's something he thought was personally important or exciting, he would always give it outsized coverage compared to what maybe someone that was just trying to say, how am I serving the most of my audience? Dave would, like, whether it was Joshi wrestling when it really started to catch on, like All Japan Women in the early 90s and had a real creative just peak then, or a couple of years later when AAA really caught on fire and really, influenced a lot of things, or when ROH started to come up, or years later PWG. Dave has never been afraid to be like, I think this is cool. I think this is important. And there's been a bunch of times, and some of those things I can relate anecdotes, but like where Dave's championing of those things, devoting extra words to them, has helped those things. It's brought people to them. And SEO is the opposite. It is rather than, I think ideally what we want from websites, it sounds what you want and what I would like, is people that are so good at their job that you go there every day and you're like, you tell me what's good, you tell me what the news is, you tell me, some opinions, and I might not agree with them all, but I'll be interested and I respect them. Like, I'm going to come here every day regardless. And SEO is the opposite. SEO is when people are searching for things that are for current stories or current top stars, how do we game it so we are the top result and we get the click? And everything that comes after the click is secondary. Like, I was looking the other day just briefly for, I wanted to make sure I caught the AEW Revolution 0 hour, the pre-show. I wanted to make sure I knew what time it was. So I Googled it, and the Observer site was one of the early ones that came up, and it is a very obviously written AI thing. It's got things like, it's got tables, and AI loves to do tables, and it's got things like this. I'll just look at it quickly where it goes, what is AEW Revolution 2026 0 hour? Answer: the official AEW Revolution 2026 pre-show featuring free matches and last-minute hype. Do I need to order the pay-per-view to watch 0 hour? Historically, 0 hour has been available free, while the main AEW Revolution pay-per-view is paid. Will AEW Revolution 2026 pre-show have big matches? Answer: AEW often loads 0 hour with fairly important tag matches, title teases, and storyline angles. Should I tune in early for AEW Revolution 2026? Yes, 0 hour is the best way to see every match and story beat on AEW Revolution night. So I'll say this. One, that's just AI. And I think the problem with that is that same literal answers and everything you could see on 8 other websites. So there is no reason to return to the Observer if you see something like that. You will, next time you want a similar answer, you won't go, oh, I should go to the Observer and see if they have an answer to my question, because they normally really do a good job with that, have answers to the things and the coverage of the stories I expect to see. You're going to go, I'm going to quickly Google whatever that is, and I'm going to go to the first result, whatever games the SEO, and all the answers are going to be the same. And like, it's amazing that they've moved in this direction, because do you know what the idea of Google Zero?
No, maybe.
Google Zero is a concept that come up with by the editor of a tech site, The Verge, a few years ago. And Google Zero is this idea that now that Google, for the last years plus or whatever, automatically gives you an AI answer to a lot of
Yeah.
your questions, that web traffic and sites that are dedicated to SEO are seeing these huge losses in traffic. Like,
Right, because you don't have to click on the link now, because they will, the Google will tell you the answer. Like, AW 0 hour starts at whatever time it starts at.
yeah. And so, like, in fact, I'll look, I have this quote from this site called DigiDay that says, quote, since the rollout of AI overviews on Google a year ago, the percentage of zero-click news-related queries has jumped from 56% to nearly 70%, according to SimilarWeb. The fault is already visible. Business Insider, which has recently laid off 21% of its staff, has seen organic search traffic drop by 55%, according to the Wall Street Journal. Naturally, ad dollars are shifting in response. eMarketer predicts that by 2029, U.S. advertisers business will shift over $25 billion, around 14% of total search budgets, into AI-powered search. CMOs, chief marketing officers, see where this is going. So the point is, I just find it hilarious that the Observer, the people running the Observer site now, they're leaning so heavy into the SEOs when there is a, we are seeing now that the SEOs are taking massive hits because the more you make your content very just lowest hanging fruit, biggest stories, biggest stars, we're not trying to like get like be a trusted voice you come to every day, regardless of what the stories and the focus is. AI is replacing that immediately. And Google soon, you know, people that want those answers, like you just said, people are going to get the answers I just read to you on the Observer site from Google search result. They won't have to click on the first SEO site that comes up. They won't give any traffic, which is what they're now chasing, other than Dave, you know,'s content pretty much exclusively.
So I guess like, and I understand what you're talking about when you're talking about like, you know, they want to gear toward SEO. They want to cover the biggest, you know, names, the biggest people, in their coverage. And like, I get all that. I
The
don't.
Observer had a story on the news section like a week ago that was patch notes for like version 1.04 of WWE 2K26. Like that is nothing but trying to be a Google result on a page. That is it.
I like it whenever John Cena Sr. says anything, it gets its own headline on every single like aggregated news site because they get to put John Cena in the headline, even though if it's like John Cena's whatever John Cena Sr. is saying is usually like not interesting or relevant to anything.
Yeah. But
But to
to your
your
point, I would just say like, yeah, ideally, if you wanted to future-proof the site, it should be the idea of there are people that you want to read here every week, regardless of what's going on in wrestling. You want to hear their opinions on whatever's happening in wrestling. And, you know, you want to read their news coverage, even if someone else breaks it first or games the SEO a bit better, because you like the human touch they do the reporting. Like maybe, for example, on the Zero Hour thing, maybe a real human could have told you what matches were booked for the fucking Zero Hour and not just had AI tell you, well, generally there are some wrestling matches on this. You know, that kind of human touch might have rewarded the Observer site with people that would go, you know what? I'm going to come back to them next time because I actually got like some depth to my answers that I couldn't get from, you know, Google Gemini.
Yeah, I guess like when I'm thinking about it, like I don't really like obviously this p would be some people would say this is a silly thing to say, but like I don't really care if the Observer site's like making money off SEO or anything like that. Like I said, like most of the people that I'm talking about like are doing this work for free.
Yeah, but you have to think if you're focused on SEO, the idea of like people that we like that are really good writers that might have like more interesting topics, they're not going to want to cede front page space to them when they're just focused on, you know, a story from that says John Cena's father says John Cena thinks this about Randy Orton is going to do better, more clicks. It's going to come up more often in search results.
Yeah, I mean, to me, like the F4W online site is not like just some like aggregation site that's sold out to Mashable that's trying to get like as many clicks as possible for, you know, its stories and trying to game the SEO. Like it's a site that wrestling fans are should be attracted to. So I don't really care about them like turning a profit off of getting, you know, all these clicks from SEO related headlines. Like that should definitely not be the focus of the Wrestling Observer newsletter or anything attached to it, in my opinion. It's a place for a niche fan base seeking out high quality work and perspective. It is not your dime a dozen, you know, wrestling news with three Z's, you know, kind of like trash website. It shouldn't be like that.
Well, there are people there that want to maximize money, and maybe some people there that think, you know, we only have so many more years to Dave, so how do we maximize money? What is the most short-sighted, you know, Jesse, you're talking about like building something. You were talking in your early, you know, statement about something that could live on past Dave. Well, everything you see from that site to me speaks to people that want to build retirement funds and cash out now. And they're not worried about building a devoted, somewhat niche audience that can sustain for years and years to come. I think they are getting in while the getting is good, and the getting is probably not going to be so good pretty quickly.
Yeah, and I just think that I have a lot of frustrations with like the platforming, and I guess we can talk about Brian now. Like, whenever I see Brian's content these days, he just seems like someone that doesn't care about wrestling. He's exhausted by this being having been his job for years and years and years, and he's totally burnt out, and it's reflected in really diminishing quality of Wrestling Observer Radio. And I'm not a regular listener, so I don't know, presumably his other contents. And I just don't know how much longer that is sustainable to keep people invested. Brian definitely has his own hardcore fans that are, Brian Alvarez fans first, and they're the people that are, paying for super chats on Brian and Vinny and whatever. But I don't think Brian has helped the site feel younger, feel more alive, feel like it's more passionate about pro wrestling. I feel like he's just a guy that's been going through the motions. At least that's the perception I have when I see him podcasting. And it's been that way for a while, where he just seems to be frustrated by having to watch wrestling every week. It seems like that's what he mostly talks about. Like, oh, this show was really long. Oh, my DVR didn't record this. Oh, there's three shows this weekend. Like, he just seems really frustrated that this is what his life is. And that is not someone that should be working, hosting a multiple time per week podcast with Dave Meltzer.
Well, he's offloaded half of that to Garrett Gonzalez. But yeah, and everything is subjective, but I will say I would be hard pressed to find, I think it, I would say to anyone that thinks you were just being hard on him, listen to a Brian and Meltzer show today and listen to one of the ones you which if you're subscribed to the Observer, you have the archives from the early days of their partnership on the Observers on the Figure Four site together, and there will be a startling difference to you in enthusiasm, in just how the show is, where Brian for years now has largely functioned as an empty vessel. His job is to say, take us through the show, Dave, to speed him up when he is only three quarters away through the topics and they're coming up on an hour, and to try and shut it down the show as quickly, ramp the show down as quickly as possible when they are around an hour. And that's it. He is I don't think he has much interest beyond that. Yeah, it is but that happens to a lot of people, right? And that doesn't mean you have to like it, but I think a lot of people eventually their tastes change or they become burnt out. And yeah, like he is, what is he doing? Like, isn't he is re-reviewing early TNA and like 80s WWF, some a lot of these shows for the second or possibly third time on this website. Like, you can go back and find podcasts where he and Vinny are reviewing the same shows, sometimes twice. And yeah, when you think of how big the world of wrestling is, it is that depressing that someone that is in some ways a very talented, charismatic broadcaster when he wants to be, who has a ton of experience, he used to have a long-running wrestling newsletter, he has connections and sources. He's been doing this longer than most people, that he is essentially reliving what he did 20 years ago and seems to have little enthusiasm, but to do the basics to get by and generate a continued income for himself. I mean, it's his life, but yeah, it is disappointing, definitely.
Yeah, well, it seems like, when he gets like this has been, I think, my impression of like what Wrestling Observer Radio has become, which is like Brian has, his most of the part does daily audio with Wrestling Observer Live. He's got his shows with Vinny. He pops up in other places sometimes. And then he gets to the Observer, Wrestling Observer Radio, which is like Dave's show. And he's just kind of been like, all right, it's Dave's show. Let's just, I'm gonna say a topic and then Dave talks and then I'll, try to, move him along to the next topic. But he is not like a participant on these shows, which like
And he used to be. He used to
Yeah,
be
and
a
that hasn't
very.
always been the case. Yeah, it used to be, you listen to Dave and Brian, and Brian, like you said, is a he can be very funny. He's hugely successful historically at this. But he just is like, all right, let me just, and they're also recorded, you know, at like 3 a.m. So he's just like, clearly just wants to get it over with because he's been recording stuff all day. He's very clearly burnt out. These are all signs of someone that's burnt out of their job.
Yeah, and I think that's why, you know, so many people loved, you know, those shows. Dave did the Sin Lamente shows with Mike Sempervivi that went on for a while, even though some of at least one of those famously Dave fell asleep during because they were going on for so long. I think they were kind of killing Dave in some ways, but people liked those, and I think people have liked in recent years the Garrett Gonzalez Observer radios that Dave does rather than the Brian ones, not because you don't hear often like, oh, Garrett Gonzalez made a really great point. No offense to him. I
No,
don't think he,
he's
I don't.
really in Garrett is very engaged with Dave in a way that Brian is not. It's very
Exactly.
obvious.
Garrett is loose and he is having a conversation with a give and take it with Dave. And like, if I'm saying he doesn't have like really amazing things, he's usually not saying crazy dumb things either. It's just, but j I'm just saying, even just ha an average conversation with Dave is more than what you get from Brian anymore. And people are just so happy to be, when Garrett started doing shows with Dave, people were so excited of that just because, oh, there's someone that is just, that just cares again, that is just loose and doing it, you know. And you know, people didn't want much. And that's sad, the word, that's like the top end aspirational thing, where the top end aspirational thing should be like someone that is a really good, like, can contribute to conversations almost as much, if not as much, as Dave, you know, and things like that. And you know, Mike Sempervive gave a little bit of that, where I think he has some real wrestling knowledge and would ask kind of things of Dave that, like, I think a lot of really geeky fans would want to know. And you know, but the best we get now is kind of someone that is just going to run down the modern topics, but at least not just say, take us through the show, Dave, and sit there silent for 25 minutes.
Yeah, that like if Dave says something, and sometimes Dave like because he's Dave and he has all these like quirky aspects to his personality. Like sometimes Dave will say something and like you wish like, hey Brian, can you follow that up? Like what Dave just
Yeah.
kind of like let slip with, and Brian is on to the next topic. Like as opposed to Garrett will actually follow up and be like, oh, what do you mean by that? Like Dave, he'll ask like a follow up question if he's essentially interviewing Dave.
With Dave, Brian has morphed into, as a podcast host, what Rob Feinstein used to be as a shoot interview conductor. Where if you people haven't seen Rob Feinstein's old, like, conducting of shoot interviews, Rob would clearly just have like a bullet point list of any thoughts about Bret Hart, any thoughts about CM Punk, you had this match, any thoughts on that. And occasionally he would get better at this, but a lot of the time, you know, if a wrestler drops some insane thing, he would not ask a follow-up. He would just go down to his list. And the next thing, like, you could ask a wrestler, and he would say, yeah, you know, I watched Vince McMahon choke a 7-year-old to death with my bare hands, and that really put a harshing, you know, feeling on my great match at SummerSlam 93, walking back to the curtain, seeing that. And then Rob will just sit there and go, okay, after SummerSlam 93, you worked Survivor Series, you know, any thoughts on that? And I feel like, yeah, Brian is kind of similar at this point, where Dave could say something really interesting, but Brian is just thinking, okay, we talked about Raw, now we have to talk about the rings, then we have to preview Dynamite. And he is just, his job and his enthusiasm at this point is just getting Dave from point A to B to C so he can go to fucking sleep. And that's it. And that's not a fun thing to hear on any level, and you're
And
not getting the most out of anybody when you do that.
yeah, and like I think like if we talk about like what's valuable to the Observer site, like Wrestling Observer Radio is a huge part of that site. It's second only to the newsletter in some cases, and I'm sure there are plenty of people that don't read the newsletter. They just subscribe for Wrestling Observer Radio.
And I'm sure Brian would say, look, Dave can go on for a long time. By the nature of our schedules and the way this job is, we have to record late at night. We have lives. I have a family. Dave has a family. And my job is to, because maybe people would point to like the shows he did with Mike Sempervive that went on so long that Dave was falling asleep, and go, well, this is what happens if you indulge Dave too much. I would argue there's maybe a happy medium. And I would argue that Brian used to have a happy medium himself with Dave, and he lost it.
Yeah, and he seems to like when I see his content now, he just seems to like And I see, like, we talked about, like, the SEO stuff, which is one thing, but, like, these YouTube clips and these, like, these shorts getting into, like, the YouTube clip game and the soy face making and the thumbnails and, like, Brian making these, you know, the same kind of points you would see on maybe some of these, like, grifting podcasts, like I was watching a clip the other day, and Brian was saying something along the lines of, you know, Tony Khan, he's booking for the sickos again, and kind of being critical of that. And I just remember thinking, like, Brian, like, who do you think are your subscribers? Like, they're the sickos that watch AEW. Like, this is the Wrestling Observer newsletter. This is, you know, the people that are, you know, like, the idea that, like, oh, like, he seems to be obsessed with, like, trying to create these, like, straw man arguments for the casual fan. And I was like, nobody wants to hear that on Wrestling Observer Live or anything like that. These are not for the casual fan. These should be for the hardcore wrestling fans.
Well, even you want to view things through the casual fan perspective. I'm so sick of everyone guessing what this imagined casual fan, as if there's only one kind of casual fan even wants. Because quite frankly, I don't necessarily think Brian knows what the casual fan wants. I don't think I necessarily know what this imagined casual fan wants. And to view everything through this prism, you know, guys in their 40s and 50s talking about, well, this might turn off a viewer. Do you know that? Like, is that anything but just a vague assumption, you know, with nothing to
Well, it's
back it
something
up?
that
And
I
you.
just, yeah, it's something that I disdain beyond. It's not, Brian's not the only one who does this, but anyone that's like essentially like a professional wrestling watcher and reviewer, like those people are so far removed from like what a casual or non-fan would be like consuming the product. And whenever you actually talk to them in real life, they're always really like fascinated by like kind of random and unexplained things, not necessarily
Yeah.
like the things people think casual fans love. Like celebrities wrestling or comedy, and like, but these people will make these arguments around like, oh, well, to attract the casual fan, you need to do this, and it's like, buddy, like you talk about wrestling all day, you cannot possibly relate to the mindset of a casual fan, just like you or I are the same place, Whenever I talk, like I said, whenever I talk to like people who like sample a product or have, they're always like really like kind of have like almost like unpredictable takes about the product.
Yeah,
It's it there's it, there's
and again,
very
this
little
idea that,
like hard science around that.
and like again, this idea that there's one casual fan, one kind. Like, you know, after every one of these big main AEW main events that has all the violence and stuff, like, oh, that's gonna turn off people. Where it's like, it's gonna turn off some people, and it's gonna really appeal to some other people, and it's going to be a net neutral to other people. Like, it's not one mythical group of fans that, you know, if you don't watch wrestling regularly, you definitely don't like this. I mean, a lot of those same people, these mythical casual fans that very rarely watch wrestling, they watch violent TV, they watched Game of Thrones and saw things as violent as a needle through a cheek, you know. But there will be some people that will turn off. So again, now we're at this point, we're just saying things that are possible, and we're not talking about the percentages, because the percentages aren't fucking impossible to know. And at that point, yeah, it becomes pointless to a certain level to just, you're just guessing what the masses say. Like, well, this was a bad move. Like, okay, show me a fucking chart, you know, prove it. Because, yeah, it just gets annoying. And it, you know, Dave is very business minded. Sometimes you can make your eyes glaze over, but at the same time, it's incredibly valuable what he does. But I guess one thing to would be, Brian does this, and to the degree a bunch of them do it, but like, when you view everything through what's successful rather than what's good, it can be kind of fatiguing and kind of joyless.
Right, which is I think like I think I want to say that PW Lost is the person who said this, but I'm not sure. But he said like the Observer went from advocating for what was best for the fans to advocating for what was best for the wrestlers to advocating for what was best for the companies and the promotions. And I think there's some truth to that, at least the written observer. But yeah, like I'm kind of out on wrestling business analysis. I'm bored by it. I don't care. I care about it in the sense of like I want there to be diverse types of wrestling out there, which they need to be financially successful in order to ensure their continued existence. But like I don't really care like the grand especially how granular like ratings analysis have gotten and the changes to Nielsen and like I don't even know what is com like how to even evaluate the ratings anymore because it seems like they change like on a weekly basis what they're actually evaluating. Like it just that's tiresome. I mean, I'm not an MMA fan, so I've never had any interest in the MMA portions of the newsletter or the Observer Radio. It seems like that has diminished from my perspective, than it was at when it was at its peak. But that's a whole other thing. How do you feel
But you don't
about?
even have to. Oh, sorry. I was just
No,
going to
go
say, you
ahead. Go
don't
ahead.
even have to do, you can do both. You know, you can do business analysis and critical analysis that is separate from business analysis. If you read mid-80s Observers, Dave would fully acknowledge how successful the WWF was while also just roasting a lot of the creative and what the changes in wrestling that the WWF was bringing as they were also successful. And if you read The Observer, you got his personal feelings about like the art to be highfalutin on wrestling, but also the business, even though those things were often contrary to each other. Where, yeah, the modern Dave Meltzer, a lot of times, well, he gives personal thoughts, but a lot of times his arguments boil down to this drew or this got a reaction, so it worked. This didn't. Where it's like, those are two separate arguments. You can t I want to know what Dave Meltzer, the person, thinks, and I want to know the business realities. And a lot of times now, it feels like Dave allows the business reality to basically become the personal opinion. You know, how many times has
Yeah,
Dave said something
and
like,
the horrible result of that is Roman Reigns is a Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Famer.
yeah, I mean. It's just I just wish there was, you know, that it just business wasn't everything. It could be, you know, I don't read a record review of an old like Bob Dylan album or Nirvana album or something and have I want to read like I don't want to read four paragraphs about, you know, well, if he changed this hook, it might have sold more copies, you know, or something like that. It's like I want to know what your opinion of this as a piece of work. I don't. You know, you can also, and I would also be interested in maybe knowing how it did business wise, but again, I don't want those things to be combined into one thing that doesn't speak to both sides.
Yeah, I mean, like I always think, like, what did Dave rate the Hogan versus Andre match at WrestleMania 3?
I think it
What
was like
was this?
-4, -5 stars,
Yeah,
and
it
that
was
was
like
it.
-3 or -4 stars, right?
Yes.
And if you read like his review of WrestleMania 3, he obviously tells you all about how successful an event that was. But then he goes and he shits on the match. And it's like, if that match happened in 2026, like the equivalent of that match, he would give it like 4 stars.
I mean, he might give it a 2.5 or so. I mean, it is, yeah, but yeah, and that's a great example of like you
Dave is
could.
not nearly as critical as he used to be. And you can make the case in the
No.
80s that he was too critical, that he was maybe too dismissive of different types of work, or whatever. But what I'll say is like the game had changed. Dave, like he's on social media a lot. He doesn't want he I don't think he wants to be criticized by nut jobs on social media. He doesn't want to be dragged by the wrestlers on social media. So I think he's very tentative to offer like really harsh criticism to the degree that like I was reading The Observer and he was talking about Aaron Wolf. Like this is like in December before Aaron Wolf had his first match at Wrestle Kingdom. And he was like pretty critical of Aaron Wolf. Like he did like a run-in on a New Japan show, and it was like, you know, Aaron, you know, he didn't show really any charisma, he didn't show any fire. It was, you know, this is looking like this could be really bad. And I was like, whoa, Dave is like really like critical of this guy. And he, if you go back and read Dave in the 80s or 90s, he's critical about people like that all the time. Like, my favorite Dave line ever is him talking about Sid Vicious, and he says that Sid is like a Christmas present with the greatest wrapping paper ever, but the box is empty. Like, Dave was really critical, and you just don't see that anymore to the degree that when you do, it's like a novelty.
Yeah, and I think there's probably a couple of things for that. I think one is some people, they naturally get more generous as they get older. I always point, Roger Ebert started to give a lot higher, he started to give a lot more movies positive reviews. Maybe, there was some, he didn't, I don't think Roger Ebert ever broke his scale. I don't think he started going seven thumbs, but in terms of like on the, in the newspaper, you start to see some star inflation. I think sometimes people, as they get a little older, they, some people get grumpier. I think I'm heading in that direction. I think some people get a little more relaxed and a little more like, I'm going to live and let live and enjoy things for what they are. I think part of it's that. I think part of it is wrestling has shifted into more of a style Dave likes. I know Dave likes different styles, but I think the general thrust of wrestling has become a lot more take pride in the in-ring, a lot faster paced, a lot more action, a lot more moves per minute. Even wrestling that, we would say is on the low end is vastly more of that than the 80s was. But I also think another big part of it, the last thing would be, I think Dave is very afraid for just, I don't know Dave, but I think Dave, from everything I've seen, I think Dave is very afraid of being left behind. I think wrestling is a business where you see a lot of people who get stuck to certain ideas that worked for them or a certain era, and then they think nothing after that can be good. And I think Dave, that's one of Dave's worst fears, is becoming one of those people. And I think he overcorrects on the other end where it's like, anything that's successful now, well, that must mean it's good, and I have to figure out why it's good, because he doesn't want to be left behind. And so I think if Dave, if there was something that was really successful business-wise, I think in the 80s, if Dave didn't like something and it was successful business-wise, Dave would be like, yeah, this is really successful business-wise, but man, I think it fucking sucks. I think nowadays, if something's really successful business-wise, Dave works backwards from, this must be good. How do I find what's, let me figure out what's good about it. I think Dave's just personal gut reactions, maybe they get tempered a bit more in time, because I think he's afraid of, becoming that, that we see a lot in older, in wrestling, of the old man that, it's passed him by. And I think he doesn't want to be that.
Oh, I agree. I think it's kind of like a, like you said, like a miracle that Dave is, so open-minded about wrestling these days. Like, if you look at some of his contemporaries, like look at Jim Cornette, right? Look
Yeah,
at look.
I think he's terrified of being someone like that.
Yeah, they look even some, but even someone like Mike Tenay, who I know Dave has an enormous amount of respect for. Like, Mike Tenay seems like he's checked out of wrestling. Like, he just doesn't like wrestling anymore. And I think Dave is, it's kind of like a miracle that Dave is as enthusiastic about wrestling, like the like especially like the in-ring product, as he is right now.
And that's one of the most
But
charming things about Dave is like, if anyone should be burned out, Brian Alvarez down. Not that Brian doesn't have a lot of fatigue from covering a lot of wrestling, but if anyone in the world should be burned out on wrestling, it's Dave Meltzer. And he seems to have like an infinite well of interest and enthusiasm that never gets completely drained.
yeah, and so, but when you're talking about like how he kind of like reverse looks at these things, where he sees something and he thinks it's successful, whether it's business wise or it gets a good reaction in the arena, he'll kind of like basically say like, this is working, so this is good, and then kind of work backwards from that.
Yeah.
It's robbing us of Dave's perspective, and Dave is someone that provides an incredibly interesting perspective because he has this just, irreproachable memory and recall and knowledge of wrestling history, and can put so much different things that we're seeing now into context. And his analysis like that is so great, but he's kind of like, I don't want to say like afraid to do that, but we're not getting that kind of analysis because he's working under this different kind of assumption based where he's like, well, if it's working, then it must be good. And it's like, Dave, I don't really care if something is like drew a crowd or not. Like, I want to know what you think, like most interesting wrestling analyst of all time. Like, what do you think this is good? Do you think this is bad? What did you really like about this? What did you really dislike about this? We just don't have that as much as we could.
And especially because, Dave does a really good job breaking down numbers, and he does find things that are counterintuitive, things about the business that you don't see in trends that he sees before I see or a lot of people see them. But at the same time, a lot of the business stuff is self-evident. Like, I don't necessarily always need Dave. Like, it's his part of his job to tell us that. But, if something works because it drew a large rating or a large attendance or had a huge pop from the crowd, those things are self-evident. I don't need Dave to just give me that and nothing else. Where, yeah, to your point, Dave's opinion, personal gut reactions to things, as a guy who's been following wrestling as much as any human being alive for the last 40 plus years, that's something that I can't get anywhere else. There's no one else that has that perspective. And when you just focus on the business, you're feeding me something I can get from eight other places for something in favor, instead of something I could only get from you, which, yeah, it, that that that's a bit of a disappointment, obviously.
And one of the challenges with the site in general is I just think, like, the site, I wish with their, like, we can just focus on their audio for a second. Like, I wish they had room and made an effort into, like, adding new voices or younger voices into the audio. Because you look at, like, okay, what do we have here? We have Big Audio Nightmare, which just celebrated their 20th anniversary, so congratulations to them. But those are people that have been around for a really long time, right? We have, Dave and Brian, okay, and Brian and Vinny, also people that have been around for a long time. We have the Fight Game people, which, unfortunately introduced the world to John LaRocca, which people LaRocca hopped onto Wrestling Observer Radio when Brian wasn't around, and I think a lot of people who had never listened to him before got to hear his opinions on things. I think that was
The
after the collision in Australia in February.
thread on the message board about that, you know what? I am glad John LaRocca was on, because in today's divided world, I think that's the most united I've ever seen a group of people about anything in the last decade. And that was good to like you have not seen a consensus like that in decades in anywhere in the world. It was amazing. I loved it.
Yeah, so like that is, he's like not a compelling voice, I guess I just call it. I don't know.
He's a friend of a friend,
Yeah,
so
he's a
have
friend
him
of
on.
friend. Like these people just seem to be Dave and Brian's friends. And then we've got Carl Stern. I'll say this, about Carl Stern. Like he is producing content that other people aren't doing. It's very niche based. A lot of it's very historical, And so I give him credit. He is doing something different on the site than everyone else. And then we also have like the Wrestling Weekly show, which is with Les Thatcher. Have you ever listened to that before?
I have sampled it, but yeah, it's generally not for me. But it is, again, something different.
I guess it's like Les Thatcher reviewing current wrestling, and he just hates AEW. Like it's pretty bad. Loves Jon Moxley.
I feel like maybe a good thing would be to start forcing more of these tribes to get together, because it feels like in the Observer site and in a lot of places on the internet, people are all in their little corners, where it might be more interesting to get like a crusty old historian with a moderately curious 25-year-old fan, put them together, see what conversation that would be a new conversation, or get someone like Dave and get him to watch something that like the 23-year-old Ice Ribbon fan, just to get Dave's random opinion or something that Dave would normally not watch or at least not talk about. Like, just we're getting this we're getting the same conversations from the same group of things. It's like the crusty old veterans and historians that will appeal to people like me. There's the people that are lightning focused on modern wrestling. There's there are people that are hyper focused on just their little scene, and again, a lot of people do that good job, but Yeah, no, we're not forcing any new conversations. We're not trying to like any get any cross-pollination here. It's just, yeah. And I'm sure there are a lot of people on the Observer site that subscribe that don't listen to any of those podcasts. And then there are some people that probably like that's one of the only two things they listen to.
And so I guess my point is, like, even within these different shows, pretty much all of them are talking about WWE and AEW and reviewing Raw, Dynamite. Maybe someone's talking, maybe one of them is like talking about TNA. Big Audio Nightmare is doing Japanese, New Japan and stuff like that. But I don't know. I guess when I think of, like, and again, you could say, like, well, this isn't going to sell any subscriptions, maybe. I don't know. But, like, there's no podcasts, I don't see any podcast talking about Joshi wrestling. I don't see any podcast talking about US independence, European independence, a non-New Japan Japanese pro wrestling, lucha, like all of these different other parts of pro wrestling of which there are fans, of which those fans are very likely to already be subscribers to F4W because this is where the hardcore fans kind of gather. They, read Dave's newsletter. But it's all just the same thing. It's this people basically from the same generation. I don't know if anyone under 40 works for the, records stuff for this website. It's like just ancient and boring. And there's
You
such an
don't
opportunity.
like Brian talking to Dave about Raw and then talking to Tom Lawler about Raw and then talking to Lance Storm about Raw and then talking to Vinny about Raw. You
Yeah,
don't
and
like
it's like,
that? You don't?
And like I understand WWE is the biggest company. WWE is the best for SEO for sure. But in the today's social media world, like Dave and by extension the Observer and people that have worked with Dave are seen by so many people as the enemy to WWE, the enemy, and these is this horrible individual, which we all know is bullshit. But, like, it's like, okay, so we're gonna cater to these WWE fans, but like the WWE is like hostile, and a fan base in a lot, and especially the online fan base is very hostile towards Dave and the Observer, and that's one also one of the frustrating things. It's like, okay, this is gonna be like this website is now like WWE Central, when that's a company and a fan base that has been really hostile towards Dave over the years. And that has and has gotten, that has not improved in the social media age. It's gotten a million times worse.
And the sad thing is, to me, if the Observer site should have a brand that reflected the best of the newsletter, it would be the newsletter was always a thing for voracious wrestling fans, where, you had to know everything, you had to know about everywhere, you were interested in the past and the present and the future, and ideally, an Observer site that would reflected that would have, like you just talked about, podcasts about every scene, columns about every scene, things about the past, business things, but also just critical things, and but instead it is. Especially, it was like this before, but it has become way more in the last couple of years with this kind of shift in who's working there and the SEO focus to it is like eight other wrestling sites now. It is driven, it is the tail wagging the dog. It is what gets views. We generate content that will catch those views, not we're the tastemakers, we're the influencers. We're going to be a destination for people that just want to know what's cool, what's hip, and then they're going to go to those things based on what we say. Now it's the opposite. It's what's big. We have to run to there and try and catch them, which again, I think that's, I think AI, to whatever extent AI grows, it is already growing enough, if it doesn't get any smarter than it is now, to draw, to capture away a lot of those views that you were counting on. We're seeing it happen.
Yeah, like the standard who, what, where, when, why, basic information kind of stories. And I mean, in general, like I'm not like really like a Fightful consumer, but I do think like the way Sean has gone about his business in a lot of ways is just far more modern and advanced and aimed at a younger demographic than the Observer site. And
And
it will be
maybe we're
really
being hard on
interesting how
people.
that trends going forward.
I mean, Dave's in his mid-60s and Brian's in his 50s. Like, maybe we're asking too much to expect them at this stage of their lives to like be on the money, you know, compared to people 20, 30 years younger than them about, you know, where media is going or things like that. Maybe that's an unfair. I probably won't have my, I don't worry. Like I already said before, I don't have to, you know, I have my finger on the pulse of things now. It'll be less so in 10, 20, 30 years.
Yeah, there could be. That doesn't mean they can't do any like prep work,
Yeah.
in regards to that. Another aspect of the site. Let me ask you, because I know you are a longtime veteran of this. How has the board changed over like the last 5 years?
I hardly visit the board anymore. I was once in my youth voted the king of the board, so that was how much I was an active part of it. It was a horrible reign. I let my subjects down terribly. But I feel like that too. I feel like the board used to be wackier, to pick a word Brian Alvarez liked. You know, there used to be more shenanigans. I feel like the average fan was maybe a bit more wider in their scope of things that interested them. And I also think that there just was a lot more people from what I've seen that used to post there. I feel like that's, and how much of that is just them not fostering a good environment for posters, and how much of that is message boards in general have largely died out in favor of Discords and Twitter and all that kind of stuff. I'm not sure how much of that plays into it, but it sucks because I grew up on message boards. I think message boards are my favorite way to read and see people having discussions on the internet. That's where I learned a lot from other people. I feel like that more long form writing where you have a chance to really think about. I hate following conversations on Discord. They never get archived in a way where people are going to revisit them. There are message board threads from or posts from different message boards that are like 25 years old that I still revisit sometimes. And I'm not going to be able to do that with Discord, which is so disappointing.
Yeah, Discord is very much a live kind of
Yeah.
conversation, not like a let's scroll back and read some stuff by its nature. It's kind of, as someone that, like you, like as a message board veteran, kind of then getting into Discord, it's very different in terms of the like the flow of the conversation and certainly being able to read other stuff. What do you think like made you kind of stop being on the board as frequently as you were?
I think social media, it was probably easier for me to I feel I think probably one thing is a lot of the people I really liked faded away from the message board communities, and so my reason to engage was less. And I also think I was more of a reader than a writer on the message boards. I also feel like selfishly that I writing on social media got me a slightly wider audience, and while I don't put a lot of stock into that, it did give me like a few nice. I've gotten jobs off of things I've, you know, social media where I wasn't going to get any work off the figure four message board. So it's like, you know, if I'm going to write somewhere these thoughts, you know, there's one place where it is more advantageous for me. There used to be people, and I don't say, you know, anyone that knows me knows I do not think much of myself, but I remember there were people that would post and go, there were people that would send me DMs, more than one, that would say, the only reason I am still subscribed to the message board, I mean, to the F4W, is to read your message board posts. And I was like, well, feels kind of weird doing free work for somebody else.
Yeah,
Like,
where's your
me.
piece of this SEO pie that
Yeah.
they're
And I
making
didn't
over it?
ask for it or anything, but I was just like, at that point, you know, maybe if I have this many people that are interested in what I say, maybe I should go somewhere where it is not paywalled, or if it is paywalled, I get the pay. And you know, that's the other thing too, which is like, you know, hearing someone saying, I don't really love this site anymore, but I'm paying $10+ back then a month just to read you. It's like, well, I could just post somewhere where you didn't have to pay $10, you know. That kind of made me feel weird in a way.
Yeah, like I wasn't on the board, I think, as early as you were, but I, have never really had that strong of an impulse to look at the board all that much. I probably have under 10 like career posts on the board. I used to use it to maybe like vanity search myself to see if people were discussing my content anywhere. That was like my main reason I used it. I never really felt like, at least my time reading stuff, like it was that interesting, or it just seemed like a lot of the same kind of standard takes in conversation I would see like on Twitter. Instead of like, this being like a really cool place where the absolute hardcore smarks gathered and discussed like niche wrestling topics. I feel like the Voice of Wrestling Discord that I'm in, some of the other Discords I'm in, are much closer to that, which is maybe what the board once was. And at some point, the user base shifted either away from the board, or people came in that kind of turned the conversation to what I would consider to be like more standard wrestling conversation that is closer to like the Wrestling Inc. comment section, which is like when I originally first started kind of posting about wrestling.
I think again, a lot of the people I really liked aged out, but I think there are still people that are good posters, people I've known for a long time that I think are intelligent people, but I just think, a lot of people grew out of it and they were replaced by people that are maybe more reflective of the observer's current focus and scope, and that's not necessarily my bag. All the power to them. And I guess the other thing to mention would be the Observer. I have no idea how they're doing. When I was young, whenever someone complained about the Observer, the thing that David Bryan would always say is like subs are at a record. Like that was like the slap down. It seems like in the last year or two, the sales are never ending to the point where I canceled my subscription for the first time in probably 20 years because I was like, sales are having so long. If I wait 2 weeks, there will be a sale. And I think I had to wait like a week. And I got one for like returning subscribers because they were doing them constantly. I think they've slowed down the new year a little bit. But I guess that's the other thing is the Observer now, they monetize everything in a way they didn't used to. And on one hand, I feel bad complaining about this because I think not enough people in wrestling media get paid enough money. I think maybe there'd be better work if more people could devote more of their time to do it. And I think people who work hard deserve a decent pay. And if the Observer, I have no idea what the pay scale there is, but if the price increases, it means more people get paid at least a little bit. I think that's great. But at the same time, I'll just think of it this way. I actually wrote this down when I was thinking about this. A subscription to the site right now is $15 a month. If you then want to listen to the shows live as they're being recorded, not after the fact, which, since so many of these shows are time sensitive, you might really want to listen to them that extra hour or two early the night of the show happening to hear the review. And if you want to watch them in
Can I just say
video,
something about that real
yeah.
quick? Like, as an East Coast person, that has absolutely no appeal to me.
Yeah, as a West Coast person, the best coast, it does have, or I'm sure from people from other countries too.
Yes,
But
for sure.
if you want video and live listenings, that doubles your subscription. That's another $15. And that also gets you, by the way, priority in asking questions on Q&As is the quote. So it used to be on the Observer site. If you wrote in, everyone got like equal consideration for writing a question and Dave will answer it, and that's the start of a change. And then so on top of that, I don't know if you remember the very early days of the Figure Four site, Brian used to do something called shout outs, which was anyone that subscribed basically got, if they ever wanted to use it, one shout out where you could write in a message and Brian would read at the end of a podcast on the air, and sometimes there would be a funny joke or a song that request and it would provoke banter or maybe even a little bit of discussion, or you could promote something. And they don't do that anymore. They haven't done it for a long time. But Brian does do a cameo, which basically is the equivalent of a shout out for $20. Now, on top of that, used to be able to ask questions. And occasionally you still get to ask questions. But nowadays it's either pay extra, that $15 for the live and video where you get priority, or on the Garrett Gonzalez shows, you can pay extra money to get a super chat, which is a chat that a question that they will feel extra compelled because you paid money to answer in favor of those normies that just pay the $30, to watch the show live. And then on top of that, this is my favorite, Jesse. I saved the best for last. Brian, and this is the one that I think is egregious, that the others I can make arguments for. Brian on Twitter in the recent years, he has, you can subscribe to him on Twitter, And that for $5 a month, he will give you his live thoughts on shows, exclusive news tidbits, and the ability to ask him questions. So this is again things you used to get for free. Like that seems insane to me that you're already subscribing for $15, and the guy, one of the two main voices of the site that you're subscribed to, is like, if you want like everything from me, that's a $5 upcharge per month. And I looked at it. He currently has 85 subscribers on that, so not many people are taking him up on that. But it's still, that's the part that feels just, again, it feels like there's been a shift in the site in recent years where it is about, you know, it's one thing to raise, everything costs more these days. I get raising prices, but it feels like everything that used to be included with your base subscription has been split and monetized, all in the efforts to basically hold you upside down and shake every available quarter out of your fucking pocket, which is, it's just insane. The idea of like, if I pay $15 to Brian Alvarez's Figure Four Weekly, I should get for that $15 to know Brian's fucking opinions on wrestling shows as soon as he has them and the earliest news that he gets reported. Instead, no, an extra $5. Like, in fucking insane.
Yeah, I mean, this is true for like a lot of the phases of the internet where like a lot of stuff was just given away for free on the internet for a while, and then people kind of realized they could charge for that stuff. And it's true across a lot of businesses. But it does, I know when they raised the price of the site probably what, 2 years ago now, I think.
They raised it a few times and fairly, it felt quick, but I don't know. My memory is vague. I mean, I remember when it was a third of the cost, so I'm old, but you
But
know.
there was they raised prices. I think it went from being like $12.99 to $15 a month or something like that, maybe $11.99 to, of course, I'm doing the, I don't know if you're doing the Canadian or US
No,
traffic
I just it, it's
fee, but
$15 US, and that's what I pay, so.
yeah. But when they did that, like there was like this promise that there was going to be like m way more content. Like you're gonna be, you know, paying more, but you're gonna get a lot more. And my impression is that there really hasn't been any additional content, necessarily that you get.
No, it doesn't feel that way. I feel whatever
That's
promise
what
that
I've
was.
heard
And
from other people too. They're like, "Oh, we're still waiting on that extra content to come." And is that
again, usually
content going to
when,
be stuff that people want?
and yeah, and again, usually when they offer something new like video or whatever, it is now, that's an upcharge. So yeah, if there was something really crazy new that they were bringing to the site, I would imagine that would be more money. And when we talk about like expecting more, why would you expect more from the site, Observer site, you know, in part because of Dave and the possibilities that Dave's kind of respect among certain people brings an audience and all that stuff. I think another reason is I think $15 is on the high end now of pay wrestling websites. So if you're charging one of the higher prices, you should be providing one of the best experiences. And as that experience gets closer and closer to free sites, in some ways, you know, again, that's why they are so reliant on Dave Meltzer, because that's the thing that feels like it is worth paying out of your pocket.
What do you think is going to happen to like the Observer Awards and the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame when Dave like retires or, you know, God forbid, passes away?
I would guess someone would try and take over. There'd probably be some succession plan for the Hall of Fame, maybe the awards, although since the awards are voted on by the subscribers of the Observer, I don't know how you would create that same audience voting block, because you know there won't be an Observer when Dave is gone. I think we'll lose a lot. I think the Hall of Fame will probably stick around, but and I think Figure Four, if Brian is still around, I imagine it will probably. I that's the thing I'll be interested in, is how much of an audience does Brian just have alone? Because Figure Four, initially when it started before Dave joined in like the Great Merger, it did have an audience of its own. I was part of that audience. I don't know, when we talk about Brian feeling a little burned out and like revisiting things, I will be interested if like if Dave retired tomorrow and Brian went back to what Figure Four was before, where he's the main draw and his cast of characters, like, is that enough to support everybody? Is that enough to support Brian? That would be, would he try and basically replace Dave? Like, would he make an offer to Sean Ross Sapp? Because that was a big help for him with the Observer, obviously, is I'm going to bring the draw, the guy who brings the news, I'm going to bring that in. Would he say, hey, Sean, we could do a podcast together. You report the news and I'll cut you in half or whatever. Who knows?
I have a feeling the site in the, I don't know who owns the rights to the Wrestling Observer name or anything. I assume Dave does, but I have no idea. But I would assume like eventually like the site gets sold to some, internet company that is buying interested in buying wrestling news sites. And the brand name is being cashed out on, is
Yeah.
my guess.
I mean, it honestly,
I
it
don't
kind of
really
feels like the bear.
care. Yeah, I don't really care what happens to that. That's why I'm more concerned with like the awards and the Hall of Fame because those are historical records. That's that we'd like to keep going. I will run the Hall of Fame. I will take
Yeah.
that responsibility on to just toss in my hat into the ring as somebody that is willing to run the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame if something, God forbid, ever happened to Dave Meltzer.
I mean, I think there will be a lineup of people, and I think some will be very qualified that will be racing to try and admit it, run the Hall of Fame. But again, I just go back to the awards or things like that, where the part of the awards, and I don't agree with all the awards, is the idea of you have to be a subscriber to the Observer, which denotes a certain level of knowledge. It's not an incredibly exclusive thing, but it's the Hall of Fame is an exclusive thing. It is only who Dave deems worthy to have a vote. But the Observer Awards are also not just like a random poll online that anyone could game,
Which is what I
just
feel like
that
would
it.
happen if Dave wasn't doing the awards.
Yeah,
Like, if it was just
that's
like
the
a
thing where
poll on the site.
that's where I feel like the awards might not survive, because I'm like, if without the Observer to kind of create that one kind of right-sized, pruning to a certain demographic and a certain size of voters, like without the Observer, I think if you just go everyone online can vote, it's not going to be the same thing. And I don't know then how do you whittle that down without making it too exclusive and making it almost like a Hall of Fame vote, which I like the Hall of Fame, but it's a different thing.
Yes, this is more of like a the awards voting is kind of like a composite of a certain group of hardcore fans at a certain time period, but it is not necessarily exclusively the territory of somebody that has demonstrated some level of significant knowledge, I guess.
Yeah.
There's not that high of a there is a barrier, but not it's not that high of a barrier that
If
makes
you
it kind
want to
of a
vote in the,
unique entity.
yeah, if you want to vote in the awards, for all this talk about how all it's so dictated by Dave, I've written lately about the awards, and you can see a lot of times when Dave's disagree with what his readers have picked. But like, if you want to vote in the Observer Awards, subscribe the 1 month of the awards for $15, and you've got a vote. You could be the most ardent Dave hating, only likes WWE fan in the world, and you get as a vote that as counts as much as anyone else's vote. And I don't know how that changed. I wouldn't bet on the award surviving in a form that I would think would be as valuable once Dave ends his career.
Yeah, and that's what I guess I would be kind of worried about if like we just turn it on to like an online poll and like a bunch of like bots vote for Jey Uso for Flair Fest or something like that. Because the awards really only like the awards themselves are only really valuable as like a historical tool in reference to themselves. Like if someone wins two Wrestler of the Year awards, that's like historically significant. But if we change the way the awards are voted on to such a drastic degree, then like the significance of the awards will be lessened, in my
Yeah,
opinion.
and I feel like the awards, their importance and their meaning has changed through time already, because I feel like the awards in the 80s, when the Observer was a more niche publication that was harder to learn about and harder to get, that was almost closer, without being intended, like a Hall of Fame voter style crowd. And it was a real great snapshot of what like the ultra hardcore tape trading fans saw, where nowadays that barrier is way less. And so I feel like the awards have gotten, for lack of a better word, a bit more normy. They are a bit, a little less reflective of the most hardcore fans. I feel like other sites have taken up that, but like if you go back, like I've been writing articles lately about like the old Observer yearbooks where you used to publish the awards. It was a who's who of people that voted and commented on the awards of people that got into the wrestling business, like Mike Tenay and Scott Hudson became Mark Madden. They all became WCW announcers, Mike, all those guys. And so many other people that got involved in the business. And it is crazy. And because there was a smaller voting block, their opinions had way more weight. And it's interesting to kind of see that kind of stuff. So, yeah. Nothing good lasts forever, Jesse. It all changes to something else.
Trevor, you got anything you want to add or anything you want to plug that we haven't gone to yet?
Through the years is my podcast with Matt Feuerstein. We review old Ring of Honor. That is THROH. At Trevor Dame on Twitter, and my profile has links to things. And my Patreon, it's www.patreon.com/mecca. So that's MECCA twice in a row. And I've, most of my almost print, all of my recent articles for like the last few years are free. I've written stuff lately about 1990 and 1991 awards and about the idea of casual viewers and things like that. So if you want to spend like a sad but slightly entertaining night reading my writing, it's all free for you there. So you can enjoy that. But yeah, that's it.
What was the most recent episode of Through the Years? Would you guys go over?
We covered Caged Rage, which had Roderick Strong versus Jack Evans in a cage, and then the Briscoes versus Steen and Generico in a cage. They did two cage matches. And the next show we are covering is going to be really exciting because that's going to be Manhattan Mayhem 2. And that is the infamous show where Brian Danielson wrestled Takeshi Morishima for the first time, which I believe won match of the year that year, where he gets his orbital bone broken and keeps wrestling anyway. It is an absolutely insane match. So that'll be fun to talk about. So that'll be a good one.
Jeez, what happens to Jack Evans in that cage match with Roderick Strong?
He does a double knee drop from the top of the cage and then like takes the full force on one of his knees as he falls down. It is insane, but I've seen crazier for him.
Jack Evans has some just like, do you want to talk about a guy where it's like seems like an absolute miracle that he is not in a wheelchair? You watch like from that era of Jack Evans, that guy Lan has so many like just like crazy bumps where like and like off of, like in he has several cage matches where he just takes like just these insanely stupid crazy bumps. You've really never seen anything like it. Like just he'll just fall off the top of the cage to the outside with no one catching him.
I remember, I think there was like a PWG triple shot he worked where he took some insane bump where he went over the top rope, like just landed on the hard floor with like, nothing really breaking his fall. I was like, that's the most insane bump you're going to see all weekend. And then he took the bump, I think, both of the next two nights. Like, he's just like, I'm going to do this every night. Just insane.
Yeah, he is like, oh, I'm gonna do a springboard corkscrew ACI moonsault to the outside, but I'm gonna land on like an asphalt parking lot. I haven't seen him wrestle in a while. I believe he's still actively wrestling. He is underrated. Like people talk about Jeff Hardy and AJ Styles and these other guys. I mean, he is up there with anybody in terms of just absolutely insane bumps that he's taken throughout his career.
Maybe there's like some kind of healing power in nicotine and monster energy. I don't know. After the cage
Well,
match,
much.
he is selling
Yeah.
being beat to crap, and a fan reaches out and holds a can of monster energy. And as he's selling like that he's really hurt, he grabs the monster energy and takes it with him. It's great. Oh, God.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. He's an interesting wrestler, especially during that time period. I mean, I don't know if he's underrated or properly rated. I'd say he's probably properly rated, but he could really rotate. He wasn't like there's the difference between him and like a guy like a Pac or a Will Ospreay is that he's not really like an explosive athlete like those guys are. So there's kind of a limit to his like believability as an undersized wrestler and like his ability to have like really, really great matches, but he could get on the top rope and he could rotate like nobody's business.
He could take an
And he
amazing
had.
beating. He could rotate really big. And he is a guy, I always say, he is a performer, where he is a guy where from the second he leaves the curtain to the second he walks back through it, he is performing. Like even when he is standing on the apron as the illegal man in a tag match, he is doing like more performing than a lot of wrestlers do in the ring.
Noted Brian Alvarez trainee.
Yeah, Brian Alvarez, maybe that would be a career transition. He can make the next Jack Evans, you know, Nick Wayne, Jack Evans. He can build, you know, find the next young
Yeah.
twink to make a hot flyer. I don't know.
He's gotta find them first.
I mean,
Yeah.
Brian was the original, so you know he knows, you know, how to guide them to wrestling glory. He just needs to look for it.
All right, Trevor, thank you so much for joining the show. I want to thank all the listeners. I hope we do, despite my underplaying Trevor as a guest. I hope he does return to the show one day. But I want to thank all the listeners, and I'll talk to everyone again in a bit.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.